Welcome to the Modern Enterprise Podcast. This is a podcast tailored for enterprise IT leaders and decision makers wanting to transform their organization into a more modern and agile enterprise where software drives the innovation. This podcast is hosted by Krish Subramanian, founder and chief research analyst of Risha.Research, a research firm focused on modern IT stacks and artificial intelligence. In this podcast, we will talk about the trends reshaping the IT landscape that falls in line with the modern enterprise framework, advocated by Risha.Research. For more information on our research, please visit www.risha.com. You can read our research articles at www.stacksense.io. We are reinventing industry research for the data-driven world by opening up our data and research process through GitHub. We encourage you to join us in our research by starting our repos or doing a pull request whenever appropriate. This will get your voices heard in our research process. You can find out repos at www.github.com/stacksense.io. You can also watch our videos and webinar recordings at www.risha.tv. Please subscribe to this podcast at anchor.fm/modern enterprise. Let us now move on to today's show.
Thanks to stacksense.io sponsor swim.ai. SWIM is real-time edge intelligence software. SWIM enables intelligent data transformation at the edge by reducing, analyzing and learning from fast data locally on edge devices.
My guest today is Matt Gillard. He used to work in IBM, and we have interacted a few times over Twitter on the topic of serverless. So last week when I wrote that blog post on stacksense.io about retiring the term serverless, he got back putting his point of view, which I really liked. So I thought I will have Matt on the show and talk about what defines serverless and where it starts, where it ends, so that we can cut through all the marketing hype and define it clearly for people to understand and use. Matt, can you introduce yourself so that we can go to the questions and talk further about serverless?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Matt Gillard. I live in Melbourne, Australia. I was in IBM for 11 years in the outsourcing organization, working for one of the largest worldwide clients, architecture and infrastructure related. So I have a pretty strong infrastructure background, so I can see all the problems. I have first-hand experience of, being in the depths of critical situations where things aren't working properly and why it's so hard to get infrastructure up and running. Now I'm out of IBM. I'm doing, consulting to companies and trying some independent contracting and trying to help companies move towards more of a pain-free life, I guess. And serverless is a big part of that, I think, from my opinion anyway.
All right. So before we start talking deeply about serverless, let's put some context. And how do you really got interested in serverless? What sort of motivated you to start looking, tinkering with serverless and probably start exploring it in a way you are doing it today? And if you can put some context and define what serverless is according to your definition, probably then we can take it to the next interesting topic about what we discussed on Twitter after my post.
Yeah, sure. So I've been interested in serverless ever since it became a thing, I guess, in AWS released Lambda, I think in late 2014. And at the time I was in IBM, IBM were actually incubating OpenWhisk at pretty much the same time. And I think they released it in early 2015. So IBM OpenWhisk got released around that time and I got started playing with it. And I realized how it solves a lot of problems. So if you think about old school databases, for example, databases have had stored procedures which are event-based, event-driven, like since the beginning of databases really, right? So I like to think of serverless as an event-based architecture, and it's So serverless is unfortunately a name that's got mixed up with marketing, as most things that take off do, but it's kind of what we've got today, right? So I like to think of it as event-based architectures, and the way I explained it to my management at the time was, think of a database, events come in, you can run some code to process those events or do something else, and then you get some sort of output. Serverless is exactly the same thing, but on a much bigger scale, and not just databases. So it can be based on any sort of event. And if you think about enterprises today, they're full of events. Every enterprise runs on events. So I was working at a telecom, very large telecoms company. And if you think about the telecommunication industry, you make a call, there's an event, there's a billing event. You hang up the call, there's another event. There's events all through the infrastructure. And basically what the old way of doing things is software that processes those events, whether it's on a message bus or whatever. And hopefully at the end, they get revenue from billing at the end of it, right? But it takes, you know, a complex path to get from making a phone call to the end where there's a bill that I get, right? So which has every phone call. And that's just one example. Every industry, pretty much any enterprise, has events in their infrastructure. And serverless is a way to get rid of the underlying infrastructure out of the way, because that's just something that's just a piece of the puzzle that drives business value. You want to get to the actual real meat of it, and that is your business processes, automate all those, and your code. That's what, you know, is important in a business.
Yeah. So, from an application architecture point of view, I fully agree with you that it's an event-based architecture. Let's sort of like look at it from the underlying infrastructure operations and cost, and try to define serverless. So I think that's what led to the discussion we had in the blog as well as the Twitter. So would you sort of like characterize serverless, associate the term serverless to only public cloud services, or would you be okay applying it to any event-driven compute that's hosted anywhere? Like, because if it is not on public cloud, then probably you are paying much beyond just the compute you have used if it is on on-premises. So how would you define that from the cost point of view as well as from the operational abstraction point of view?
Yeah, so the I guess the simplistic way that I would define it is that you're paying for a function to be run that auto-scales, and you don't have to worry about scaling. You pay only for the CPU you use, nothing more and nothing less. You may pay for I/O, as an example, S3. So I think that was where we had our discussion. And S3 as an object store is a serverless storage service, in my opinion, because it wasn't called serverless back then, but when it first came out. But it is, because no one has to worry about scaling it. The only people who have to worry about managing it are those that run the product. And as a consumer, I don't have to care about it. I pay for my I/O, I pay for my storage, and that's it. So anything that, and if you wind it back a little bit to how you pay for VMs, and by the way, I put containers in that same bucket, you're paying for compute, you still have to worry about scaling. Sure, things can be made easier with auto-scaling, but you still have to define the parameters. And if I don't have any workload running, if I don't have any requests, say if I have a quiet time during the evening, or, you know, my peak time might be during the day, but during the night I might just get the occasional request, you still have to pay for that compute. Even if you scale it down, you're still paying for it to be sitting there. And the other thing is that you don't have to worry about the operating system. So patching, none of that. And you have I'd argue serverless is probably a more, even though it's still early days, a more secure option, because your attack surface area is purely your application. it is not all the crud that comes with an operating system and third-party you still have some third-party libraries for your app. You still have to be careful about what libraries you load. The whole shared libraries, all that sort of stuff, all that instantly goes away, and I don't have to worry about operating any of that. And that OPEX savings I can put into, more developers to develop my application and derive business value. So basically a financial, and ease of operation advantage is the way I see it.
Okay, so from what you define, it has to be a hosted service, because if I'm going to host the within code serverless platform, then I am anyhow paying for the compute even when it's not being used by my end user. So it is a hosted service. So it has we have to sort of keep it only in the public cloud domain, and it should take away some of the operational headaches like auto scaling. And all that. So from that point of view, you will be, from a cost point of view, you will be okay with paying for persistent storage, because somehow you have to pay for it, but the compute has to be you only pay for what you use. Under that scenario, wouldn't using Spot instances or let's say something like AWS Fargate or Azure Container Instance, but in a Spot instance model, where I only pick a start my container, run my job, shut down my container, don't pay anything. Would it constitute something called serverless?
I guess I don't believe that would be, because I still have to maintain my container. But there's a little slight difference there. I'll give you an example. I don't know if everyone is aware, but containers basically power functions, right? But they're containers that you don't have to manage and you don't pay for, etc. Another example in that scenario would be Amazon Code Build. It runs a container in the background while it builds your app. You provide the commands to run, etc., for a managed container, or you can provide your own. But you're not paying for the compute, you're just paying for the service. And it's there for, it might be there for minutes while it does your compilation and then goes away. There's a lot of nuance there that maybe people take too far, and that they consider Kubernetes is not serverless, for example. You still have to pay for your servers. You still have to run that service. I haven't looked at Fargate enough to discuss that, but there may be, I guess it's moving to a model where you can run a task, that task can run in a container and then go away. That as long as you're not paying for, compute you're not using, then you could possibly argue that is serverless if it's auto-scaling. But if it's just your average container, then no, I don't see that as a serverless thing. It could iterate a little bit in the next couple of years. There might be new services that use these things that are actually really serverless and event driven, but we'll see what happens. There's new services all the time. And I'll just pick up on your earlier point about public cloud. There's the open source type functions as a service now, like OpenFAS, Apache OpenWhisk. I think Azure Functions has an open source component as well. Mm-hmm. Running those on-prem is not, it's not something that I don't think adds much value. So there may be use cases where it's useful, but you still, if you do run those on-prem, you still have to maintain the servers that run that. You're still paying for that, and you've actually got to pay for servers to run that. So the business value there, I'd say, is negligible. And what we see now is there's Azure Event Hub, which is like an event aggregator. And then there's the serverless framework, which has an event gateway. There's all this new sort of thing, that there's these new products that are I guess, aggregating events. And that could be, you have events on-prem, so there's going to be on-prem infrastructure for many more years, right? Because just the way things have gone. But you still want to take advantage of serverless infrastructure. And the way to do that is to use these event hubs, and you can initiate events from your on-prem infrastructure to these event hubs, even if they're hosted in a public cloud. These days with hybrid IT, I don't like the hybrid cloud word, but hybrid IT, most large organizations have, you know, a direct connect. Definitely enterprises, most of them, would have a direct connect to one of the main cloud providers. And that is an extension of their on-prem data center. So they can use those event aggregators to create a hybrid part of their app would be on-prem, possibly the large SAP, you know, all the big data stores, which is hard to move to cloud by themselves. But you could still have a serverless component in public cloud, which use those events to do certain things. You know, you're onboarding customers, your offboarding customers, you know, there's so many different use cases to be able to do that. So that's how I see sort of that world.
Okay. So like by focusing only on the event-based architectures, aren't we sort of like constraining the evolution of serverless? Like so let's take the case of something like Google App Engine, where you store your code on a code repo, but let us assume like it's a simple code for a simple website, and whenever a visitor calls it, Google App Engine or whatever that platform is, miraculously brings up the container, serves that customer, then goes back, charges only for the visits that are coming in. Would that fit into the serverless description?
I thought App Engine was more platform as a service based, where your code is loaded. You still have to provide scaling parameters, that sort of thing. It may be sort of an in-between type scenario, I guess.
Yeah, but it doesn't functions as a service also sort of like you need to define your scaling parameters and everything in your configuration file. So sort of like I sort of like see a very thin line separating these two. I see your point about how you should define serverless, but when I talk to the folks at Google or Azure, they sort of make a case saying that there is a very thin line separating these. What is the guarantee that like tomorrow Amazon will sort of like come down and call Fargate as serverless because there is a event driven, it can be it can play into the event driven world of Lambda. So I'm just thinking out loud about where it can evolve. Like if we can, to put it in the other way, are we constraining the evolution of serverless by focusing only on event-driven architecture? That's my question.
I guess from a Lambda perspective, it auto scales. The only parameters you actually can provide is throttle parameters to stop it from auto scaling too much.
And that's a new
paradigm, right? Because you can easily get into a loop and suddenly you'll get a huge bill for this cheap service.
So clearly there is some responsibility on your side when it comes to sort of ensuring that the auto scaling fits your budgetary needs or financial things. So can't we just extend that and say, in a platform like Google App Engine, you just provide some parameters like minimum scaling, maximum scaling, but everything else is sort of like managed in a seamless way by the platform. So then maybe Google App Engine is not exactly doing that, but technically there could be a platform that does everything where you say, hey, this is the maximum scale I want to achieve, but within that scale, the containers, bring it down, and I only pay for what I use as a container compute. So aren't we sort of like constraining ourselves by saying that it has to be an event-driven architecture, it has to be at this level on the operational front? So I'm just thinking out loud, especially from the point of view of where we are going to go a few years from now.
I guess I haven't done that much with the App Engine, but I see it as a, I guess, as a an in-between point. Mm-hmm. I don't see it as a pure, serverless type architecture, because there's still, you are paying for compute time. And if you want it to be immediate response, right, something's got to be sitting there to take it. Even the Lambda has a bit of a cold start time, right, which could be, a second or more, mm-hmm. To be ready. But your cold start time for an app engine would be a lot longer than that. Yeah. Even 10 seconds, might be too long for the application. Because, by the way, serverless is not a solution to every problem, like from a function perspective, because there is latency involved. And if you some use cases, I can think of financial as possibly one, where latency is a killer. There may be others, but maybe App Engine in that case is a better fit. But for most people, serverless and function latency probably wouldn't be an issue. And of course, you have the other downside of serverless functions is the limit to the execution time. So you have most of them, I think, provide a 5-minute limit.
I think some of them allow you to extend it by sort of opening a support ticket or something like that.
Yeah, that's right. But I think that is just a constraint on the way you architect things, and you can usually architect around that using other services to do, you might have AWS Batch for a long-running batch, or, workflow service for something else, you don't have monolithic functions. That's like an anti-pattern. You have one function that does something quickly, and you'll find that most functions in code are actually, do things relatively fast. And for those use cases that do need an extended period of time, like, processing video or, whatever it is, you can deal with that in other ways, like App Engine or maybe Fargate or, one of those other services. You don't have to, just because you're serverless doesn't mean you can't use other services. It's just a category of service, right? I don't think I'm a fan of the right tool for the right job. A lot of people don't know all the tools, so they just stick with what they know. And that's been a problem in infrastructure architecture in the past, and solutions architecture, but I think it's going to be a significant problem of constraining the business going forward from now, because there's so many different services now that you can choose from, whereas before you just had, a handful of approved, software or architectures you could build. Going forward, you have all these other choices from the cloud providers, and choosing the right fit for your solution is actually probably the longest part of your architecture. And you still have to architect things. Just because you're in the cloud doesn't mean you just slam something together. You still have to think about it and see what components need to talk to what. You still have to deal with security issues. You still have to operate your code. You still have to refresh your code, and you still have to possibly change your runtime, because the runtimes will go, like Python 2.7 will probably go away in the next couple of years. So if you've got any old code, you still have to keep that up to date. So it doesn't solve everything. It's not a silver bullet, but it absolutely helps with reducing the friction to responding to business needs and user needs.
So. I agree. And before we sort of wind down, you have been working with tons of enterprises. So I would love to get your perspective on how enterprises see serverless, and are you seeing a lot of adoption? What is your take on state of serverless inside enterprises?
It's not well known. I don't think a lot of them. You might have pockets of communities within enterprises that do stuff with it, but it's something that is an unknown, and people look at you strangely when you talk about serverless type architectures, probably less strangely these days, because I guess it's probably taken off more in the last 12 months or so than previous. But in my current position, so one thing I'm doing is one thing that anyone can do from a serverless perspective is your operational tasks, your mundane day-to-day things in AWS, you can automate, because every service in AWS provides a hook to Lambda to, well, not every service, many of them provide a hook to do certain things. So you can auto tag things. You can, add standard security groups. You can automate so much of your process using Lambdas, and that gives your organization experience in dealing with it, and you can move to more complicated things. And that's what I'm trying to do is try and show teams, you used to use TIBCO for this sort of thing, but now you could, you could use a Java, Lambda function to perform this task, this business task. Start small and then iterate, and then slowly you get there. I mean, the first serverless, when Lambda first came out, you could only invoke it via the API. It was only, I don't know how long, it might have been a year or so, maybe two years later, when the API gateway could invoke Lambda functions. So you could have external. And then now, just this year, API gateway has got private VPC hooks. So now you can do everything. You don't actually have to expose anything to the internet, and you can create your REST API completely internal using Lambda functions, and that can be consumed by your organization. So it's slow and it's new, and people are hooked on the Kubernetes, and the DevOps teams are, unfortunately, they think that's sort of the solution to the problem, but it's not. It's the same stuff done differently. You still have to manage it, and it's complex. Kubernetes is extremely complex. Sure, it's fun. Everyone likes to play with fun tech, but does it actually solve a business problem? And I'd say no. So yeah. That's the way I see it.
I agree. Thanks a lot, Matt. Thanks for the conversation. I think this will help add some clarity to the discussion. So let's keep talking.
Yep, no worries. Thanks, Chris. Thanks for the time. Appreciate it.
Thanks to other sponsors of StackSense.io for their continued support. Thanks to CloudFabrics and CoreStack for their support. You can learn more about CloudFabrics at www.cloudfabrics.com and CoreStack at www.corestack.io.